In a time where social justice organizations are under attack, we bring you Rad Ops. That stands for Radical Operations. It's a dialogue-based tool that supports organizations assessing and discussing the possibilities and limitations of putting liberatory values into practice.
Many organizations are in turmoil as they pivot to meet this moment. RadOps offers principles, guiding questions, and tools that organizations can use to identify ways that they can and cannot practice liberatory values in this unjust world.
I'm one of your co-hosts, Yeshna Maya Padamsi.
And I'm your other co-host, Sha Grogan Brown. Together, we bring over 40 years of movement operations experience to inform these conversations. Our topic for today is the role of assistants. I'm talking about the wizards behind the scenes, the strategists who wrangle the schedules of very busy people, the ghost authors who compose diplomatic and thoughtful email replies to complex or sensitive inquiries, the brilliant scribes who summarize the key points of meetings in a way that help people recall what happened and what they said they would do next. We see you and we honor you. We are super thrilled to have another RadOps co-founder here with us today, Felicia Martinez. And when you hear Yeshna talking about that cozy office at the National Domestic Workers Alliance and caring across generations and hand-in-hand staff, Felicia is one of those people. Felicia is a longtime movement operations worker, co-founder and co-moderator of the RadOps online community over on Facebook, and former executive assistant at an organization that grew from 7 to 100 staff during the time she was there. Felicia has worked on organizational infrastructure and resource development in formations like Reframe, National Domestic Workers Alliance, and the Funders Collaborative on Youth Organizing. And we're so happy to have her with us today.
Welcome, welcome, Felicia. I'm so, so happy you're here. We're really looking forward to talking with you about the role of executive assistants because of your experience and perspective from so many years of being an executive assistant at both FYCO and NGWA, where many people confused us for each other, thought we were twins, sisters, or called each other our names. And I'm particularly excited to have you here because of our many years of working together at NDWA on the A team, the admin team, as well as many hangouts at my collective house in Brooklyn back in the day, which, come to think of it, is also a study in operations. And I count you as friend, as comrade, and really, really happy to have you here.
I'm just like glowing inside. Thank you, Yeshna. And thank you, Sha, for having me. I'm really excited to chat with you all. We've been chatting and it's exciting to be able to share some of our conversations that have been so generative for me with other folks.
Yeah, I was just saying before this, you know, I really have learned so much from you from afar until I met you. And then even more since I've met you and had some really powerful conversations every time. So we like to start out each of these conversations in the spirit of, like, you know very well, no one size fits all. And so we want to ask you to share with us, what are some of the like big questions or visions that you have on your mind? Like any big lessons learned over these years of work or assessments you're making about this time that you think are kind of fundamental big picture before we get zoomed in? So, and things you might want to like refer to through the episode or ground us before we get going.
Yeah, I love starting with a good big picture question because I think like probably like many of us, when I started doing, you know, taking on operations roles, it's very detail oriented, right? And it can be very easy to just focus on the nitty gritty, especially when you're learning a new role. How do I do this task effectively, right? Is kind of the like top of mind question from the day to day. But I think over time, what I repeatedly ground myself in is just thinking about this idea that if we really believe that we can win, how does that change or impact how we do our work today? And you know, I've been in this work long enough to see many movement conversations evolve and, you know, go through various iterations and, you know, new questions emerge, new ways of doing things emerge. Some things get left behind, some things get integrated, right? All of those kind of processes. And I've seen it, you know, specifically happen around questions, you know, related to operations work from, you know, when we started the RadOps Facebook group, however many years ago that was, because there was no space where we could talk to other RadOps workers, to now having, you know, folks have multiple options on multiple platforms, right? Multiple communities. And some people are in, you know, more than one of those communities. Some people are, you know, choose to stay in one, but it's like that evolution in and of itself. And some of the questions around how to do this work, you know, in a values, you know, liberatory values aligned way are more recent and more new. And I think about, like, no matter sort of what phase in the process we're in, sort of like evolving our work and how we're thinking about our work, like, what does it mean to really think about, like, part of what we're doing right now is actually practicing for governance, right? Part of what we need to do right now is think about, okay, there are things we need to do right now that are responsive and that are accommodating to external factors, the nonprofit structure, mm-hmm. for example, and all the rules and regulations that, you know, we have to navigate with that, right? And we try to do those things in a way that feels like it's aligned with our values and our vision. And is there a way that we can do those things that, even though we're not completely playing on our own turf, we're doing them in a way where we're, like, practicing? You know what I'm saying? Practicing for the day when we are the ones governing, right? And, like, how do we think about that big, bold vision and then bring it into the day to day, even if we're having to make concessions, even if we're having to do some things that don't, that feel out of line with that vision? And so that's the thing that I myself bring myself back to pretty frequently, and not in a, you know, the answers to that question are many, and debatable, right? But I think keeping grounded in that question is something that's really important to me. Like, what does it mean to be practicing? What does it mean to be building something now that is setting us up for, if we were to take, right, have governing power tomorrow, would we be ready? Would we know what we want to do?
Whew. Yeah, I really feel that, like, in my heart as you're saying it.
Mm-hmm. I love that. In so many ways, I feel like it's a little bit of time traveling, of both getting really present to where we are right now and what you're saying about practicing deeply now for our future vision. And I'm also thinking about, there's people before us who dreamed up where we are right now, and who longed for where we are right now in terms of how we're running our organizations, how we're running our movements. And so, yeah, I'm just thinking about that time travel. And related to that, as you know, we're building a RadOps Lineages timeline. And very important note, you are in that timeline. As we mentioned before, you're one of the RadOps founders, co-founders, alongside Tara and May and me. And yeah, when you think back to the early days of RadOps, what was a lineage that informed your approach? And who or what do you want to name and honor now?
Yeah, I love this question. And I think it is really important to start with lineage for the reason that you name, right? Like, I think of the concept from, like, Native folks on this mm-hmm. continent around 7 generations, right? Being, like, looking mm-hmm. forwards and backwards at the same time and always situating ourselves where we are in relationship to that. But I think for me, someone that always, that I just carry with me so, like, presently is my grandfather. My grandfather wasn't a revolutionary, you know what I'm saying? He wasn't, you know, a radical, I don't think, in the work that he did, but I learned so much from him over his lifetime. You know, he was a farm laborer, went from farm work to, you know, being a truck driver, and he was always really active. He was a union organizer in the capacity of, you know, as a worker, and, you know, was involved with, like, Teamsters, UFW, you know, various sort of labor organizing back in his time in some rural Southern California. And you know, out of his leadership, he ended up sort of getting into like politics, was working for a county supervisor as a staffer, like state senator and assembly people. And, you know, during that time in his own small community, he was like running for city council, serving on the school board. So he was like always just really active. And even when he sort of retired from that world and was like working as, you know, well, they called it a secretary, but, you know, at the church that he was a member of, you know, doing administrative work, like he always did so, like everything he did was with this passion and this vision to improve the material conditions of the lives of the people that he cared about and the community he was from. Right. And when I think about like operations work and I think about how many hats we have to wear sometimes at the same time and how many hats we wear just over the trajectory, right, of the work that we do in movement or in our careers or in our lifetime, and all the sort of forms of work that we do. It's like, I think about like, you know, sometimes we feel called to do something and we do it. Sometimes, you know, leadership is like, we need you to do this. And then we go do it because it's needed. You know, there's like lots of calls that we respond to, but when I think about my grandfather, I think of how like all of it, right, no matter what the role is that we're playing, is like coming from that same vision and that same love, right, for our people and to improve the lives of people. So that's who I always carry with me, just really like presently. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that. I love that so much. And I think it's so important to name people who aren't necessarily the big names, who are our grandparents, who are our cousins, who are in community with us. And so thank you for bringing him into the space, and love learning more about you through your grandfather. But with that, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and what types of RADOPS roles you've played? What many hats have you worn? And your own personal operations route, how you got into this work?
I think I've been called to do like operations and operations adjacent work in some way, just because it kind of natural, like my brain kind of naturally gravitates towards certain things. Like, yeah. I really love organizing. When I was a kid, I had what my mom called the thingy collection, because I would like collect trash, and then I would sit there on my bed and like organize them according to color, according to whatever. Okay, so that, you know, my brain just does that. And I think as a like extension of that, likes to like plan things and like likes to have a very like quantifiable task list where you can just like check things off, like did that, and now the project is done, right? Which so much of our work is not that, right? Probably the most important parts of the work is actually not that, but it's really satisfying, right? So, you know, but I think, you know, I think also there's a way in which I really love to be in sort of support roles and like help other people shine. You know, I have a kid who's in performing arts, and I was like telling Yasha, I love being a stage mom. Like, I love helping her like get her outfits together and like making sure she eats. And, you know, I love that part of it. So I think, you know, I think kind of just who I am kind of gravitate towards this type of work, but it's also, there's also a choice, right? Right. And I think, you know, obviously who I decide to do this work with, and, you know, and sort of what formations and how I decide to apply that, you know, is out of a, you know, a place of, you know, political conviction and vision. So I have been working in, you know, organizations that are in nonprofit structures for, I think, more than 15 years. And I've done all kinds of, you know, event coordination, office management, worked on both sides of the fiscal sponsor relationship, have done grants management, like all the things, right? All the different things that we know and learn how to do, because we have to do them. But I did, you know, my role as an executive assistant was sort of the longest role that I had, the longest continuous role. And I did that for 7 or 8 years. I lost count at some point, but it was either 7 or 8. You know, when I think about sort of the through line between those things, I think the thing that comes up for me is like thinking about relationships, right? And so I'm really excited to have this conversation about executive assistantship, because I think this question of relationships is so core to that role. And it's not always the question that we is at the forefront of our minds when we think about this kind of role.
Yeah, I really appreciate you speaking to that kind of centrality of relationships, because I do think it's, like I was saying, every time I've talked to you during this project, that core value of yours has really come through to me. And, you know, I think it's also really helped us inform this framework and these principles that we wrote together. I'm curious if there's anything else you'd want to say about before I have some questions about the RadOps principles, but is there anything else you want to say around like why for executive assistance in particular, do you feel like that sort of the relationship is so central?
I think there's some traps when we think about executive assistantship or any kind of assistance, you know, personal assistant. And it's like the primary relationship that's always like front of mind and it is the relationship around which the work is gravitates, right, is the relationship between the assistant and the director or the person that they're supporting, right? And it kind of can feel like it's a one-directional relationship, mm-hmm. And that is like an appropriate way for the energy to flow. And that's not untrue, but I think that's a really like limiting understanding of the role and what it can be. And in my experience and in talking to other executive assistants, shout out to Mae Singerman and Kelly Archbold, helped me prepare for this conversation. But the one thing that comes up so much is like, it's not what makes you effective in the role itself is not just about that, like sort of two person relationship. Like you are also navigating the relationships that your director has externally, right, with partners and maybe with enemies. navigating the relationships that your person has within the organization, with other staff, with members, you know, with leaders, right, board members. You are navigating your own relationships with those people in order to move what needs to be moved with them, right? So you have your own relationships with all of those folks. Basically, like any possible relationship that can be had in the organization, like to draw an organizational chart that's not about, you know, positional authority and is about relationships, like the executive assistant will be like off to the side of the director, but the relationships will be like arrows to everybody, right?
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, but then there's like the body that is the assistant and the director, sort of, if you think of that as sort of one small team, mm-hmm. that team is in relationship to the organization, right? Mm. That team is in relationship to all the people that I just named. And then this doesn't always happen, but I have felt that, or in my experience, I've seen where when executive assistants, because it can be a very lonely and isolating role in so many ways, we need each other too, right? Mm-hmm. Like you get to that where it's like, oh, the other executive assistants are the only ones that understand, right? You kind of have that mm-hmm. feeling. And in my experience, when an executive assistant can have like a pod or a community, whether within their organization or, you know, across organizations that, you know, they can like talk to, seek support from, it's really part of a setup for having a really successful relationship and being really effective in your role. So that's when I say it's all about relationship. I'm like, it is all about relationship. I mean, you're doing a lot of tasks, but like how you do them, why you do them, when you do them, all of that is defined by the way that the assistant is navigating and assessing the mm-hmm. crazy complicated terrain of all these overlapping relationships.
Yeah. And like you said, not losing themselves either, you know, and like, I think I've had relationships with assistants too, where it's like, you know, we honor their labor and we also honor their own protagonism in their mm-hmm. role. Mm-hmm. And I love what you said about all the arrows. It's sort of like, this person needs to know a lot and also needs to hold a lot for the organization. So
yeah, the relationship with yourself is so important. We should definitely talk more about mm-hmm. that, because it can get lost when you're pouring into somebody else.
Yeah. And it also reminds me of a thing that you said at some point in one of our conversations, and that we've just kept saying. It's sort of like our main goal here with the RadOps project is talk to each other. And like we got to just keep talking to each other, because that's how we figure things out. So, okay, I want to pivot us a little bit to our principles that you helped us develop. And we're asking each of our guests to sort of share which of these RADOPS principles resonate or have been a guiding force for you in your approach to your operations work.
Yeah. So I think since you all did such an amazing job at sort of synthesizing these principles, is really hard to choose because they're all so relevant. But there are a couple that kind of like rise to the top when I think about, you know, the assistantship kind of role. And I think the one that may kind of go without saying, but we have to say it because we cannot assume these things, is, you know, the honoring the dignity of all labor, especially historically invisibilized labor. And I think, you know, that one feels very important, not just because of the sort of invisible, the invisibility of the executive assistant role, sort of the way it's crafted is kind of inherently tends towards invisibility, but because I think the people that tend to do this kind of work are people that have like a feminized life experience, right? And so the intersection of like invisibilized labor and who is doing that labor is not coincidental. So I think just sort of, you know, just naming that. But in terms of like a couple of other ones that really kind of came to mind, the two that really resonated with me were prioritizing collaboration, connection, and relationships. Again, the relationships. And then also embracing contradictions. And I think those two actually like inform each other, especially in this kind of a role, because like the role itself is kind of a walking contradiction, right? when we think about like being liberatory, like it can feel like, I say it can feel because I think there's many ways that we can like adjust and mitigate this dynamic, right? But like the setup of the role is like extractive, right? It's like you are a person that is pouring support into this other person. And given that you are probably also, you know, a woman of color, you know, you are probably also doing that for many other people in your life outside of this role. So the person at work, it's like an extension of what we were already like expected and socialized to do. And that can be very exhausting and draining. And I think this value around embracing contradictions, like I'm really glad that you all named it as such, because I think there's a difference between naming contradictions and like embracing them. And to me, embracing them doesn't necessarily mean loving them, right? I don't always love me some contradictions, but I do think we have to hold space for them. Mm-hmm. Right. And when I think of embracing, like I think of that. Like there's something between naming and loving that is just like, can we do a little more than naming? Can we make room for it? Right. Even if it's really, really uncomfortable. And I think it's, you know, I when I think about the executive assistant role, I mean, there's so many things that I feel like this feels really weird and problematic to say, but like you can draw so many parallels to other kinds of like intimate relationships, right? And I think about like, you know, like intimate partner relationships, which your executive relationship, you know, your EA relationship should not be an intimate partner relationship. But if I think about parallels and lessons that we can draw, it's like there are many complicated things and we're going to have a more successful relationship when we can like talk openly about those things and yeah, even embrace them. Like how many times do you hear couples like joking about like, oh, they're the one that loves to go out and they're the ones that's always home, you know, and I think they're so boring, but I still, you know, love them, right? Like that kind of thing, like just really like putting it out there, like can help to break some of the tension and awkwardness and really allow for then like, what do we do about this that feels okay to both of us, right? And I think in an executive assistant relationship, like we do not want for people to burn out with resentment, right? We can't afford in this work to be like letting relationships get ruptured, right? And I don't mean relationships can't change, right? They can, right? We don't always have to stay in relationship with each other in the same way. But like when you get those ruptures, and I know people out there listening know, because who hasn't been in an organization lately that's not having some like really serious and hard rupture, right? And when you're in it, it's like you can be so clear about your stance within it. But like if we pull back, like that's not good for any of us, you know, and it's not good for the work. That doesn't mean we can't have conflict. And it doesn't mean that, you know, we're going to create a like assistant director relationship that feels equal, where the assistant is getting the same amount of support that the director is getting. That's not going to happen. But naming that can help us like work together to mitigate some of that. So just to give a really concrete example here, and I have more that we can talk about. When I was at NDWA, there was a point at which a couple of assistants were hired for some of the other directors. So I wasn't the only one anymore. And the A team that Yashna referenced, we were having a little breakout during a staff retreat. And somebody, I think it might have been Tara, said, well, why don't we create like a little pod for you guys? Or how, what if you guys just met once in a while? Like, you know, and we ended up doing that. And I think it was really supportive for the assistants, who are very busy people and under a lot of pressure, to, you know, at first we were meeting, you know, an hour a week, and then quickly was like, okay, I think we can shift to, you know, half hour every 2 weeks or whatever. And, but just having touch points and building that relationship with each other, right? So there was a way in which we worked together as an organization or as an administrative team to kind of solve for some of the challenges. But like, that can't happen if we're not going to name what the challenges are.
I mean, that was amazing. You know, you're talking about guiding principles and which ones really resonate with you. And I think where you left us with the strength of talking to each other, especially with peers, the executive assistant pod is so important. And I think why also the RADOPS network and this work has been so well received is because we're finding each other and getting to talk to each other about similar experiences. And there's so much that we're learning from each other. And I still learn every day from the RADOPS network, and so grateful for that space. But in particular, and I'm so glad you mentioned the executive assistant pod. So I'm curious about what were like live questions that y'all were talking about at that time, and how do you like what are the live questions that executive assistants are grappling with now? Are you hearing the same things? Has it changed? What's new? What's different?
Yeah. Oh, that's a great question. I think so. I'm going to start with, you know, when we were sort of meeting as a little cohort, a little peer support group. At that time, I think like so many of us that come into this role for movement, you know, social justice-y organizations. I'm trying to think back. I don't think, I believe there were four of us. I don't think any of us had previous executive assistant work. And so part of it was really helping each other just learn how to do the thing, sharing. There was some like skills share, tools that were working for one person that may not work for the other person, but you know, cool to think about. Maybe it helps you open up a, you know, another possibility. There was that kind of stuff. But it was a lot of, I think it was a lot of just helping each other figure out how to do this, how to do the role. Aside, you know, and that's like sort of aside and on top of like just the more kind of moral support of, you know, having a really kind of unique role that's like in direct relationship to people with high level positional power, and yet you yourself don't have any positional power at all. It's just a really specific kind of a role, and you don't usually have like a team, right? It's not like, oh, the organization's growing and we're adding a comms person. So now the comms person has a little team, and we're adding, you know, three more organizers. So now the field team is a team and not just, you know, one person, you know, on the other team. Right. So, exec assistants are usually working in isolation. And so just having, you know, having each other was really important. And I think that is still a need, right? Because that's inherent in the role, and that's not going to go away. And so, you know, one thing that I think about in terms of like what's on the mind now, like I have been tapped over the years or asked to support or be a resource for an executive assistant who's onboarding because of my experience. And I think about that, you know, there's like books out there. There may be like training courses on LinkedIn. I don't know. They're all very like corporate, which doesn't mean they're necessarily fully wrong. Like there's a lot. I did read one of those books when I, you know, was first working as an exec assistant, and it was helpful in some ways, but like it's, you have to be able to in your own head discern like what here is relevant and important to me and how I want to do this work and what my organization needs from me versus like which sort of layers of this is, you know, sort of corporate BS and we don't align with our values or doesn't match the type of work that we do. You know, I think the lack of kind of specific resources for those of us doing this work. And that's why I'm so excited that like we're having this conversation. You all have like put out the resources that you have because we need it, right? We need it. We need it for people that are like kind of doing these roles, but that want to do it and need to do it in a way that's different from how the role was conceived or is kind of designed. So like training and support is definitely always going to be there. But I think the other thing that might be different is, you know, the 2020 COVID pandemic moment, like changed so much about how we all work. And the shift to more distributed teams, you know, more distributed sort of staff, the shift to remote work, I think really raises to top of mind for me this question of like, how do you build a deep and trusting relationship with one other person in a remote environment, right? And I think back to like my experience, like when we started, you know, when I started, it was a very small team and I had lots of in-person time with the person that I was supporting. And as the organization grew, we saw, and as that person's sort of public profile grew, we saw less and less of each other, to the point where like we hardly ever saw each other. But that relationship we were able to establish in the early years, which was like in person, you know, shared meals, like small staff get together, like, you know, they knew my kid and would bring my kid little presents from their travels or whatever, like that kind of like intimacy that we were able to have ended up providing a foundation that then carried us through even those years where like we hardly saw each other and we're mostly communicating over text, right? Or like saying hi to each other across a screen in a staff meeting with 50 other people, right? And I just wonder like if the starting point is that, like then how do you replicate or how do you build? And I think this is really important because the other thing top of mind for everybody right now is the like hostile political environment we're in, right? Everybody feels more vulnerable, right? Resources feel more scarce. You know, people's brains are in survival mode for very legitimate reasons. There's like really hard staffing decisions being made due to the constriction of philanthropy and, you know, those resources. And it's like, there's just a lot of like tension internally and externally. And in that kind of environment, it's really easy to like ground or like make decisions and prioritize based from like fear, right? Mm-hmm. Based from a place of mistrust. And like in an executive assistant relationship, you actually really have to start with trust. If trust is broken, you address it, obviously, right? But you have to start with trust as the starting point because, you know, in order to be the most effective, right, the assistant needs to have access to so many intimate details of this person's life. And I just think about, like, what makes that possible? Building a strong relationship. What's the really amazing way and a really effective way to build strong relationship? It's like in person, face-to-face time. And we're not in that environment anymore. And we're also in an environment of heightened like external pressure, which pushes us to orient from, you know, so it's kind of like a clusterfuck, you know what I'm saying, of conditions.
Yeah.
I think going back to, you know, what we were talking about just a minute ago, like, okay, that's where we're at. Let's name it. Let's put it out on, right, and figure out what we can do to mitigate this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. As you were talking, it actually took me back to my early days around as we were forming this RADOPS framework together, in the early days of one piece for me was around how operations staff, how it's very easy to be in a top-down approach where directors or program staff would just pass off an assignment, like do this task, do this assignment. And part of what we did internally, I think, at NDWA together was rework that prior assumption or belief of these roles are top-down roles, and that rethinking about we're actually peers here and we're co-creating this work together. And that's partially what you're saying about the relational piece, the trust piece being so important, and the respect, the mutual respect there that we're co-creating this work. And how do we not think about it as top down or here's the task, but how do we solve this problem together? Because we need each other and we trust each other to do so. So,
yeah, and you were, as I recall, we're really giving a lot of leadership around that and a lot of agitating. And every time I see ops people in an organization I work at sort of agitating around this, I think, like, we've done that. We've been here before. how can we like start from this?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Well, and it's interesting because for me, I have been in roles actually where I worked with people as assistants. And, you know, I was an interim ED for a brief period, and then I was a deputy director and a co-deputy director. And I was really blessed to work with a number of people in an assistant role over those years. And I learned so much from each of those relationships. I'll just quickly shout out Kelly, who you spoke to, Yahaira, Raisa, Adela. Thank you for all the things. And, you know, it does require humility because there is a lot of like intimacy in like, okay, you have entire control of my inbox, of my calendar, of all my files. And so it means that it meant I had to also be responsible and humble, you know, in kind of being really honest and hearing feedback and being responsible for my work. And also really responsible for like equipping each of those folks to do the role that they were here to do. And one of the things I really tried to strive for is to, you know, give as much political grounding for the why with every request I was making, so that it could help explain and give them the kind of background for like, why am I asking you to do this thing instead of this other thing? Even though I said something else the other day, now I'm saying this, helping them understand the context for why, and also receiving pushback and inviting sort of like, I think all this is possible. And they're like, that's not all possible. And being able to be in that real talk, like, it's not all possible. So then what is the thing now? What is now the priority? And just that level of like engagement and trust. But that also really, yeah, kind of as much as I could, here's the political reason, and getting clear for myself so that then I could get clear with my requests and then equip them to also be in that with me, you know? And I think we've talked about like one of the components of all the RADOPS approaches is this kind of like, we make assessments and decisions about which liberatory values we can and can't put into place in our work. And I think especially for executive assistants who, like you said, they're in the midst of all these relationships, they actually really need to understand most things that are going on in the organization. And in order to make the calls that are necessary for the organization and for the strategy that they're also part of trying to move, you know? And so I guess in that kind of, when you think about as an executive assistant with liberatory values aligned approaches, like what are some successes or pitfalls that you've seen around how assistants can be supported and equipped or not to play that kind of role?
Yeah, well, I really appreciate you naming your experience from sort of the other end of the relationship, Shaw, because I think there are a couple, well, there's definitely one thing I want to pull up from that, which is that I think in addition to just, not just, but in addition to equipping your assistant to be able to work effectively to support you and the organization, when you invest in reading that person into, right, all the thinking, everything that's going on, all the intricacies of the relationship, which again requires a high amount of trust because and a high amount of like integrity on the assistant's part, right, to not go out and then do or say something that's gonna exacerbate, right, some of the, like, you know, tensions, conflicts, whatever, all the things that come up as we work with other human beings. So in addition to like equipping them to do their job effectively, part of it is, I think, one of the byproducts, but it doesn't have to be a byproduct, it can actually be done with intention, is also investing in the development of that person, their political development, their professional development, right? And I think that's something that gets really overlooked with executive assistants, but to me, that is a value that we should have as people in movement, right? We should always be developing leadership and developing the people around us. And there is a model of executive assistantship that is not that, right? That is like capitalism in its purest form. You're extracting labor from this person who is the assistant, right? And you're not investing anything into them besides their salary. And their vacation time. Right. And that is a model, right? That is possible. There are options out there. You can get an AI scheduler, you know, you can hire an executive assistant from a agency, you know, somebody you never see, right? Like, these tools and resources exist. That's one way of getting some stuff done. But I don't think those things align with the vision, again, going back to like, what is the vision of the world we want to see? Like, we want for everybody to be equipped to participate in this like project that we're building together, which is like a better world, right? And your executive assistant, you know, has a really specific job and may not have the flexibility to go to 2-week leadership development trainings. I'm not saying they can't. They most definitely could do that, right? That is an option that you all have to choose for that person. But there are ways to also infuse that into the day-to-day, right? And so this thing that you're naming, right, about like part of entrusting that person with the level, the like scope and depth and nuance, that level of knowledge that a director has and carries, part of entrusting that person with that information, you're also building them up, you're also helping them to understand the work better, right? Not just their work, but the work. So I think about like, that is one really concrete example of like how we can do this in a way that's more like aligned with liberatory values.
I'm so glad we're talking about all of this. And something I've always felt, and in particular through watching you in this role, Felicia, is how much hidden power there is in this role. And you've touched on it about the relationships that the executive assistant role is connected to. But can you say more about the leadership within this role, the power that's here?
Yeah, the leadership part is really invisible to a lot of people, but it's there. It's definitely there. I think to bring in maybe a really concrete way of thinking about this, one thing that I experienced, and I always tell this when I talk to new executive assistants also, is that, you know, your perspective on things is very unique. And because of that, you can offer right, that perspective in a way that can be helpful for the organization, not just for your boss, who you can also assist with that. Like you're saying, Shaw, like, this is not all possible, or this is possible if we do this. Or I know you say that, you know, this funder relationship is not important, but this guy has literally been texting me 5 times today. And I think we don't want to exacerbate, you know, we may want to tend to this now. Just so you know, right? So there's like those kinds of things, but you also get a really interesting view on the whole, on the organization and the organization's work. And one thing that came up, that would come up for me sometimes, was like that feeling of all of a sudden I have work that's not actually on my job description, you know, and we all get that, right? And it's very easy to get in a huff about that kind of a thing, right? Like, this is not even what I signed up to do. You know, I'm not getting paid to do this. Like, how many of us, you know, have had those feelings? But when it happens, it's an indicator of something, right? And in an executive assistant role, what I would see is that I was often seeing entire areas of work, entire projects and programs in their very early stages when nobody else could see them, right? Because I would be scheduling the exploratory conversations. You know, I would, right, like, I would see who my director was talking to and be like, what are you guys talking about? You know, I kind of need to know. And then it's like, oh, this is a conversation that's coming on. Or all of a sudden the director is like saying, hey, can you, you know, do these 3 fundraising tasks, you know, like kind of expanding the work a little bit. Or like, can you handle these 3 tasks that are, you know, maybe more like for a comms person, but we don't have a comms person to give them to yet. So you can do them, right? So there was a way in which I could see what the emerging needs were, what the emerging like areas of work were, what the emerging priorities were, and what the emerging needs were, right? And I would on more, you know, it was in a position because I had good relationships across the staff to then take that information to people in a strategic way, right? To other directors, you know, to the deputy director, right? Ask them about it, right? What's going on here? Do you know about this? Like, maybe they didn't, maybe they did, right? Or flag like, hey, I think, you know, it may be a good idea, like plant some seeds. We may be needing to hire, you know, an extra development person because I'm starting to see work pass to me that should really be for that person. And it looks like it's going to increase, right? So those were things that I was able to kind of, you know, kind of communicate. I wasn't in a position to make decisions about them. They were usually at a stage where it wasn't like urgent, you know, where like, oh my God, you're right, drop everything. We got to hire somebody new right now, or like create a new line in the budget today, right? Like not quite there yet if I did my job right and didn't wait. So that level of like protagonism and like discernment was something that I think I learned how to do. And I think in the best case scenario, when like Shaw, you're saying when that person is equipped with information, they can do that kind of thing in service of the organization.
I love that. And I love that you felt that you could do that, that you felt that you could be proactive and had access to the director, the deputy director, to be able to communicate that. And I think part of the purpose of this work too, and of this podcast in particular, is we want other executive assistants who are listening to question, can I do this as well? Can I be proactive and take what I'm seeing to leadership? And I want to say to any leadership that's listening, this is also a call for you to ask your executive assistants these questions, that they are seeing things that you might not be able to see just because of positionality. So I think that it also goes both ways. But I'm really glad that you felt like you could do that. And I feel like that speaks to a little bit about seeing value in your role. So how did you always feel value in this role? And if not, how did you learn to find value in this role?
Oh, that's such a great question. I think I always felt that there was value in the role, but I don't think I really understood like what kind of value, right? I definitely came on, you know, like I said earlier, like, okay, I gotta like book a flight. I gotta schedule a meeting. I gotta learn how to, you know, use the calendar. I gotta learn, you know, what it means when my boss gives me a quarterly work plan and these five things are on it, what does it actually translate to? You know, so it was like that level. But I think what really helped me develop a deeper understanding of the possibility and what the role could be and kind of grow into it was because I did have relationships across the organization and with other people that my, you know, director had relationships with externally. I, over time, developed my own relationships with those people, right? And they would give me feedback, you know, they would tell me like, oh, thank you so much for XYZ, you know, and not just like, thanks for scheduling that meeting. I'm glad I got to talk to your boss, you know, not just that, but like, I would end up getting in informal conversations. This is not something that showed up in like a 360, you know, annual evaluation. It was like in the context of those relationships, you know, running into a funder at a event where I went to go help set up or where I showed up to just pass my boss a document that she needed to sign or something like that, right? Like getting that feedback from those people, like, oh, I really appreciate whatever the thing was, right? Or internally, like I would often get this specific feedback from actually the deputy director that like there would be times when they would be surveying the staff around, you know, whatever XYZ topic. And I would often feel very ill-equipped to provide helpful feedback. And I would say that, and I would consistently get the feedback that like, no, but you like, maybe you don't know, you know, any one area of work so deeply, like you'll bring like a little insight that ends up being really pivotal or real, you know, and it was because of that positionality, like you're saying, Yashna, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think I did learn the value of the role and the like, potential of the role, but the way I learned it was through the relationships I had with other people, because I was able to develop those relationships as myself, not just mm-hmm. as the extension of my director.
So good.
Yes. We are running out of time and we want to keep talking, but we have a speed round to get to. But I have one more question before we get there. And this could be an entire other episode, so it won't be sufficient. But I just want to name, I think there is, and I've seen this, I've done this myself. I've created a role where people are like a part-time assistant and a part-time logistics or admin role or assistant to two people. And I'm just curious if you have like quick thoughts. What is your take on that kind of like a hybrid type of role? What could make it successful or what are some pitfalls that make it not work?
Oh, I have a very strong opinion on this, but it's based on, you know, many years of seeing this attempted. And I can just talk about what I've seen, which is that I've never seen that kind of setup be sustainable in any form. And when I mean not sustainable, I mean like I've seen multiple people in those kind of split roles not be in that role after like 6 months and not on purpose, right? Or just the role just doesn't exist after 6 months for whatever, you know, because it doesn't work. And I think, so that's my opinion, it doesn't work. If somebody has made it work, I'd be super interested to know how. I am not, you know, I'm open to learning. But I think the reason is that an admin assistant role and an executive assistant role are actually two different roles. And it's easy to think of them as very similar and therefore complementary because so many of the tasks look the same. But I think for all of the reasons we've been talking about, the executive assistant role is really unique. And so when somebody is in a role like that, there's a lot of confusion around role clarity, you know, having to answer to different managers, you know, being an executive assistant for different people. Like it's learning two different people very intimately could be done super challenging, right? And it's a high probability that a person who is taking a role or getting hired for a role that's half admin assistant, half exec assistant, or exec assistant for somebody that is not, we're not ready to invest in a full-time assistant for them, high probability that the person taking that role does not yet have the skill level to be able to make something like that work.
Yeah.
Real talk.
Yeah. from someone who's done the admin role and not the executive assistant role, I would agree, where I've had to do hybrid work in that role, and it's a limited experience. So
it's like a pinch hit, not a home run.
Yes.
Something like that. I don't know if that's the right metaphor. I'm not good at sports.
Yeah, and maybe that's the thing. Maybe it's like, you know, if you're going to set up a role like that, go into it knowing that that's what it is and have a expiration date, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But again, next podcast.
Yes, that's right. Well, we have arrived at our RadOps speed round, where we're going to ask you a series of questions and first thought, best thought. You're going to answer. Are you ready?
I think so.
Okay. Spreadsheets or Post-its?
Spreadsheets all the way.
Notes, digital or analog?
Digital.
Text, phone call, or voice note?
Don't call me. Voice note or text reply.
Call me never. Receipts, do you keep them or toss them?
Scan and toss.
Shout out an org or an ops person you are loving right now.
I'm going to shout out all those people in Minnesota who have been showing up to provide daily needs for their neighbors who can't leave their home safely. Laundry, delivering medicine, grocery runs, shuffling kids back and forth to school. That is how we put our skills to work.
Mm-hmm. Community operations.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. Community operations.
What song do you put on to set the tone for a meeting or a session?
I am notoriously the person that does not have any song because it's too distracting for me.
Related, what is the soundtrack to your operations work?
I am currently listening to the aquarium filter in the background of this conversation. And that would be it.
Three words to describe the future of movement operations.
I'm going to say complicated, liberatory, and joyful.
And one wish you have for movement operations people in this moment?
For my movement ops people, and especially executive assistants out there, my hope is that you have the support that you deserve in all aspects of your life.
May it be so. Thank you so much, Felicia, for being here. And your really thoughtful, depthful answers. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for doing this project and for creating this resource for all of us.
Thanks for helping birth this whole thing.
That's right. We hope you enjoyed the show. You can subscribe and listen to more episodes wherever you find podcasts. Check out the additional resources from each episode in the show notes and take it all back to dialogue with your teams about building adaptable and values-aligned infrastructure. You'll also find links there to subscribe to the RadOps Substack, where you'll get the latest updates and resources.
This show is produced by Josh Elstro and published by Convergence Magazine. Design support from Kimmy David. Music by Tiger Cat, my amazing 10-year-old, with Polish by Josh. And remember,
keep it rad, y'all.